Today we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Hey Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Maseh b'zachar shel rechelim zakein utse'aro meduldal. There was an incident where there was this male sheep that was aged, utse'aro meduldal, and its hair had grown very long. What they're describing here is a bechor that is yet to get a mum. And since it doesn't have a mum in it, there's nothing you can do with it. You're not allowed to do giza, you're not allowed to do avoda, you can't shear it, you can't do avoda with it. They're just waiting around for a mum. So they're describing here an animal that's aged already because it hasn't gotten a mum, and its hair is very long because it hasn't been sheared. And then all of a sudden, Ra'u Kazdor Echad. And then some Roman official sees this animal, which is a sight to be seen. Vamar Mativo Shozeh. And he says, what's going on with this animal? You don't usually see animals around looking like that. Amrulo Bechorhu. Venu Nishchat Elim Kein Hayabomum. It is a Bechor, and you can't shecht it unless it has a mum in it. Natal pigum. He took out what the translation of the word would be dagger. Although Rashi says that it was a romach, which is more like a spear. Mitzareim ozno. And then he caused a mum in its ear. He tore the ear. Bama selifnei chachamim. Yitiru. The case came to the chachamim and they said that that's a mum. A mum is a mum. Now you can eat this animal based on the mum the kazdor put in there. Bacharshi tiru. After they heard or got wind of the fact that the chamer matir it, halach vitzrein bozneh b'chorot acherim. Then this Roman official went around and started making mumim and all the b'chorot that were waiting around for a mum. And then, vasru. And then they made it asur. Made that only on the first time were they matir it. After the first time, they were not matir it. Rashi says that the difference between the first time and afterwards is what is the understanding of the goy here in terms of his making the mum and the implications of that. In the first incident, the goy has no idea whether his action will have halachic efficacy. It's not clear that whatever he does will help to be matir the bechor. He's unaware or uncertain of the halachic implications of his action. As Rashi notes over here, because he might think there's a difference between a mum that happens by itself versus a mum that is made in the animal. So the goy in the first case is not certain that whatever he does will help, because maybe you need a passive mum, not an active mum be made in there. After he sees that that worked, and then he goes and does it again, now he's certain that his action will have implications, and therefore we don't allow it anymore, because now his actions are specifically directed at creating the halakhic outcome to be matir the bechor. So that's how Rashi distinguishes between why in the first case it was nitar, and why in the other cases it was not nitar. On the other hand, if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he brings an alternative view, which is similar to the Rambam in the Parashat Mishnayot, which is delo tzivu beferush habalim lo lekazdor velo letinokot. There was no explicit instructions given by the owners or by the parents in the case of the kids we'll see in the next case. Mishom hachi etiru. Because of that, they made it mutar. Aval. Afterwards, when he goes and makes large numbers of cuts in all these bechorim, and then the balim do not object, that's the equivalent of it doing it based on their instructions, and then because of that, they made it asur. So the Rabbeinu Gershom views this as being an issue as to whether the goy is your shliach, or is this a mir la'akum? Are you basically telling him what to do? In the first instance, they didn't give him any instructions. They didn't tell him what to do. They weren't even trying to tell him what to do. He asked a question. They answered the question. He's not considered to be the shliach of the Yisrael or the Balim in that case. The other hand, after he did it once and they were matir it, and then he gets wind of it, he's going around doing this, it's clear why he's doing this, and it's clear the implications of what's happening. And therefore, when they don't object and say, don't do it, he becomes as if he is a proxy for the individuals there, and it's as if it's being done with their consent, or being done with their instruction. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, even if the goy knows that his action will be efficacious halachically, the only question is whether the Baalim are using him or sending him to do this. And in the first instance, they didn't think he was going to do it, or they weren't actively engaging him to do this. Whereas after that point, when they don't stop him, then it's as if they're giving him permission because they know what he's going to do, and it's as if he's acting on their behalf. So those are the two different ways to understand the difference in the Mishnah. Rashi is saying the difference is whether, what is the intent of the goy or the understanding of the goy. In the first place, he doesn't know the halachic implications of his action. After that, he does know, and that's why it's a sur. Whereas for the Rabbeinu Gershom, the question is the goy acting on your behalf, or is he not acting on your behalf? In the first case, he's not acting on your behalf because you have no idea what he's going to do. He just asked for information. After he got the information, you see what he did, and then he continues to do it. It's clear that he's acting on your behalf at this point because he knows what's happening. You know what's happening. You know what's going to happen when he gets a hold of the Bechor now. So that's as if he's acting on your behalf. Pamachat, there was another incident. There were young kids playing out in the field. Kashru zanvoy tlaim zebeze. And they tied the tails of the sheep together. And one of their tails was torn off. He happened to be a Bechor. The incident came before the Chachamim. They said that that's a mum in the Bechor. And that is fine to shochet the Bechor based on that mum. Kids understood that the Beit Din now says if you do that, then it works. They went ahead and started tying up all the tails of the Bechorim. And then the Chachamim said then that doesn't work. So again, for Rashi, that's a question of whether the kids understood the implications of their action. In the first case, they did not. They were playing. In the second case, or the cases afterwards, they already know, and they're doing it intentionally for the halachic outcome. Whereas, according to Rabbeinu Gershom, it has to do with, in the first case, nobody asked them to do it. Nobody directed them to do it. They were playing. Afterwards, when they realized that it would be beneficial, and then they continue to do it, then they're really acting with your acquiescence because they know what the implications are, and if you don't stop them, they're basically acting as your proxy to go ahead and do it. Zakah, this is the principle, koshu l'da'ato asur. Anything that is, according to Rashi, l'da'ato, meaning the da'ato of the goy, then it's asur. According to Rabbeinu Gershom, l'da'ato means the da'ato of the ba'alim, it's asur. Shelo l'da'ato, according to Rashi, means if the goy does not understand what the implications of his actions are, according to Rabbeinu Gershom, the Baalim didn't ask this goy to do this, or didn't send him as their proxy, mutar, then it is mutar. Pam acheret haya, it's a little different gears than what we have, it's pam achat in our Mishnah, but the Gemara is asking here is, how come you need two cases in the Mishnah? What's the difference between the goy and the tinokot? Why do you have to mention both of them? Betzricha, diash minyan ove kochavim, if you only mention the case with the goy, the kazdor, delo ati the misrach, because he won't then do this on a regular basis, or in essence, start to engage in isurim. About katan, da'at the misrach, a katan that will end up then engaging in behavior that is problematic, aim alone. Maybe we would say no. According to the Rambam, da'at the misrach simply means that we're not worried that a goy is going to repeat this type of behavior. If we don't see him doing it, we're not going to suspect that. Whereas like tanim, they're more likely to do this again and again because they enjoy it and they see they did something good, so they're more likely to repeat that type of behavior. So Rashi over here says something very interesting, because by the Oved Kochavim, we would have thought, or the Pashtut of what the Gemara is saying here, is that an Oved Kochavim is not nitztave on an issue of putting a mum in a Bechor. Since he's not nitztave on that, then even if he continues to do this or act in this way, there's no real repercussions for that because it's not one of the mitzvot that he's nitztave on. Then the Katan will eventually be a gadol, but he's also, there's a mitzvah of chinuch, and here the katan's not allowed to put a mum in a bechor. And if he continues to do that, ati the misrach means he'll grow up thinking it's okay, and he might do it when he's a gadol. Or even if he continues to do it as a katan, still mitzat chinuch, you're not supposed to allow him to do it. So therefore, we would think that a katan is different than a goy. Rashi, on the other hand, says that the sirche doi kochavim lo ichbat an. The fact that the goy goes off the derech and starts to sin doesn't bother us. Because they sin all the time. And so what's the big deal if he adds another thing to his box of sins? What's very interesting about Rashi is that he assumes there's some problem here. There's no clear reason to believe that there's a problem for the goy. The goy to put him a mum in a bechor, he's not one of the sheva mitzvot b'nei noach. Why should there be any problem whatsoever? Rashi's saying, oh, there is a problem, but we don't worry about his problems. Where is there a problem? So you have to argue something along the lines of either it's inappropriate or that when something is kadosh or mukdash l'Hashem, it has broader implications than just for Israel. Even for a goy, that has implications when it's mukdash l'Hashem. Maybe then it would be restricted and there's still isurim. The ashmein and katan, if you only told us the case about the kids playing, mishum dola'ati lichlufei begadol. The reason that we would allow it there is because nobody's going to mix up a katan with a gadol. Just because we permitted a katan to do this, we're not going to allow someone who's of age to do something like this. People say, what's the difference? What's the difference if we do it? So then people will get confused. So maybe there we wouldn't be matirit. Therefore, the Mishnah brought both examples to tell you, both by the case of the katan and by the case of the goy, when they did it, we were matirit because we're not worried about the misrach, not worried about them doing this on a regular basis, even though that's exactly what happened in the Mishnah. The kids went ahead and did it on a regular basis. But nevertheless, we're not worried about that becoming, that's an unusual or an outlier case. But we're not worried if you're matir in one case, that the kids will continue to do this to put mumim in Bechorot. And similarly with the goy, we're not worried if we're matir the goy, that you're going to think to be matir Jewish people, Israelim, to do the same thing. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Katina, lo shanu, what's true in our Mishnah is only true, eladamar lei, elim gein ayabo mum. When they speak to the goy, when he asks them what's going on here, and they say, this is a bechor, and we can't eat it, elim gein ayabo mum, unless there was a mum in it. So the implications of that statement are that it happened passively. If there was a mum in it, we would be allowed to eat it. The implications then for the goy are, if I actively do this, it may not solve the problem. Because it's only if it happened that there was a mum in there. Aval, im amar lei, im naseh bo mum, if you say that if we put a mum in it, then that's almost like you're goading him to put a mum in there. Come on, take care of it. So the way you phrase the answer has implications. If your answer makes it, like according to Rashi, unclear as to whether his action will have a halachic impact, because it's not clear here that whether you need a passive mum or an active mum. And so when he does it, he's not sure, that's fine. But if you already say that if you do something actively, it will work, then you're already goading him to do that, meaning that he understands the halachic implications. According to the Rabbi Gershom, it's a question as to whether you're instructing him or not instructing him. If you just say that if there's a mum there, it'd be mutar, it's not that you're giving him any instructions. It's not like you ask him to do it. If you say, im naseh bo mum, if there, we make a mum in it, it would be okay, then you're already goading him on. Because then it's, command amar lei zilave be mum adami. It's as if you're telling him to go make a mum in it, according to Rashi, meaning that it'll have a lot of efficacy. According to Rabbeinu Gershom, it's as if he's your proxy. Amarava michte. Mameilohu, either way, the word naseh or haya both mean passive. And that might be because the word nasa could also be mean nasa. And therefore, when you say nasa, means that there was a mum that was made in it. Mali haya, mali nasa. Ela nasa nami memeluhu veloshna. It's also a passive statement, and it doesn't matter. So it's not the active verb, active plural verb, nasa. Let us go do this. Let us make this. So that would have problems with it. But the word nasa really is a focus on a past tense of passive, which is nasa. It was made in it. And so therefore, the word nasa can also be interpreted to be something that is passive. Given that, Rava says, why does it matter if you said imhaya bo mum or nasa bo mum? Whether you say either one of them, they're both passive verbs. And that means that you could misinterpret the information the same way, which is that the goy could think that you need it to be passive, active won't work. Or according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, that's not making the goy into a proxy for you, because it's just saying, if there's a mum in it, it's not telling him to make a mum, it's not instructing him or goading him to make a mum, it's just saying, if there is a mum in it, it would be mutar. Therefore, Rava says, either language would be fine. Zeaklau, kosher the dat asur. So this is the principle, which is if it's done intentionally, then it's problematic. Lituye mai, what does that come to include? It's a classic question in the Bavli. Anytime the Mishnah gives a summary statement of Zeklau, the Bavli assumes that that's just not a summary of everything we said in the Mishnah. It's coming to say something more that's then said in the Mishnah. What's the more here? Lituye groma. In a case where you cause the problem, that goes back to the bright that we quoted on Lamed Daled Amud Aleph, where if you put a piece of dough on the ear of the animal, you put a press figs on the ear of the animal to cause another animal to eat it, that is considered to be lidato. That's like as if you're intentionally doing it. It's as if you are creating the problem. According to Rashi, the dat over here is the dat of the goy. That means if the goy does a derech grama, it'll still be problematic.
Because we already learned from the Psukim, Kol Mum comes to include even situations of Grama. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rambam, Dat here means the Dat of the Baalim, and therefore what we're saying here is the Dato means that the Baalim did it there, Grama, and that would be problematic. So not only is there an Isur to tell a Goy to do it or instruct a Goy to do it, there's even a restriction to do it in a Derech Grama. When it's a loaded Dat, Le'etuye Misiach Lifitumo. That comes to include a case where he is just speaking about it. Misiach Lifitumo, in other places in Shas, comes up in circumstances where we need testimony, but the person that would possibly give the testimony is not Kasher Le'edut. So generally it comes up in the cases of a Goy that has information that we need, but he can't be an aid because he's not Kasher to be an aid. And in many places we say if he's Mesiach Lefi Tumo, if he happens just to having a conversation, and the conversation is not about his testimony, it's just a back and forth, and he happens to mention in the conversation this information or these facts, then it's believable, because he's not trying to make you believe the information. He's not trying to give you testimony of the information. He just happens to mention it in passing. So this comes up, for instance, in situations like where the wife wants to know if the husband was killed, the husband was dead. You can't have a guy testify to that fact because he's not an aide. On the other hand, if he happens to be talking or speaking about the situation, maybe there we can believe him because he's not trying to give aidut. It just happens to come up in the conversation. That's called Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Over here, Rashi says Mesiach Lefi Tumo is just the opposite. It's a case where the Israelim are speaking amongst themselves. It was a case, Shelo Shalam Kazdor. The Roman official didn't ask them any information. Ella, Hey Matzvam Mesiach Lefi Tumo. They happen to be discussing the matter, even with him, it sounds like. They're just mentioning to him, this old sheep over here, been hanging around here because it hasn't gotten a moment in it forever. They're not trying to tell him anything. They're not trying to hint to him anything. They're just telling him information. But the initiation was from their side, not from his side. He didn't initiate the conversation. The Mishnah, the Kazdor, initiated the conversation. Over here, the Jews are initiating the conversation, not in an instructive way, but in an informative way. And that's called Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Like they make some comment like, boy, this animal's never going to get shechted. Because it needs a mom, and they didn't intend for him to make a mom in it. They're just telling facts or information. So that's how Rashi says, Mesiach Lefi Tumo. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, says, Etuya Mesiach Lefi Tumo, Dafilu Damar, Elim Ke Nasebo Mom, Kari Mesiach Lefi Tumo. So the Rabbeinu Gershom plays on the previous Gemara, that Rova's statement, where he disagrees with Rav Chista's distinction. That's what the Etuye is to come include here. Even when you say Nasa, that is okay to say, and it's not problematic. It's called Mesiach Lefi Tumo because you're not instructing. It's still a passive form of a verb, and therefore it's okay to say it, and it's not problematic. That's how the Rabbeinu Gershom says it. The Sfat Emet over here gives an explanation, which is basically the classic case of Mesiach Lefi Tumo. It's the Goy. That is Mesiach Lefi Tumo. He's basically discussing the matter. For the Goy, he just happens to mention that he did this, not because he intended to be Matir the Bechor, but rather just because he was enjoying himself, or he saw that Jews can't do this, and he wants to do this. And that's a Mesiach Lefi Tumo, that he's saying that he didn't have intent to be Matir the Bechor in this case. And that's what it means, Mesiach Lefi Tumo. It's not that he came and asked them, what's Mativo Shalzeh? It just happens to be they're in a conversation, and he happens to mention this information. All right, next Mishnah. Hayah Bechor Rodfo. If a Bechor is chasing after him, meaning that the animal is trying to hurt the individual. Bato, if the person turns around and kicks the animal to protect himself, Basabo Mum, happens to be when he kicked him, he also made a Mum in the animal, Harzeh Shochatim Alav. There you can shecht based on that womb, because even, Rashi says, even if it is a Kohen, because Lefish Lahatzalato Nitkavein. His whole purpose over here was to save himself. His intent is not to make a mum in the animal. So in that case, it's not called making a mum, it's called derech hatzalah. It's a way of saving yourself, protecting yourself. That self-defense was not done to intentionally make a mum. And therefore, if there is a mum, we're not going to penalize you for that. We're not going to put a knas on to say that you can't shech based on that mum. It's not clear whether that still is an isur.
meaning that maybe there is an Isser to make a mum in a Bechor, just you won't be penalized for it? Or does it mean there's no Isser at all? Because this was a Maisa Hatzolo. And a Maisa Hatzolo is not a Maisa Mum. Similar to a formulation that we see by some of the Rishonim, the Chazanish, by Nezek, that if you do something Nezek Derech Hatzala, that's not called being a Mazik. That's called being a Matzil. And if you do it Derech Hatzala, it's no longer called Nezek and you're not responsible or culpable for it. So you could argue the same thing here. Since it's done Derech Hatzala, it's not called a Mum. And you're not Chayab at all. And that would be similar to what Rashi said before, that when you do something for one intent, not for the other intent, that's called Dover Sheinu Mitkavein, and then that would be Mutar. Or you can argue that it is a Mum, and you are culpable for that, but nevertheless, since it was unintentional, we're not going to penalize you and say that you can't eat it. It could be either one of those two formulations. Amar Papa, Lo Shonu El Sheba'ato B'Shat Redifa. It's only true when you did it in self-defense, while it's chasing you. You kicked it when it was chasing you. Aval achar redifa, after it already settled down and it's not attacking you anymore, you go and kick it. Lo, that would not be considered to be not putting a mum in it. Or derech hatzala. Pshita, that seems pretty straightforward. Now, ma detein wa tzarehu demidkar, he's taking out his anger on the animal. He's blowing off some steam. It is some residual feelings, that ill will that he has towards the animal. And therefore, it would be okay to shecht in that mum, kamash malan, that we don't say that. And then there's an ikadamre that says that we do say that. Amar Papa, lo teima b'shat v'difa in, avash lo b'shat v'difa lo. Don't learn from the Mishnah that's only when it's in the heat of the moment, that when you kick it, the mum is okay, but afterwards it's not okay. Elo afilu achar v'difa, nami. Even after the chase has died down and the danger has passed, even then, when he kicks it, it's still considered to be okay in a mum that you can check on. My taima, tzarehu, the midkar. He's still angry at the animal. He's taking out some of his frustration on the animal, and he goes and kicks it. Not because he's trying to make a mum, but because he's upset about the animal just did to him. He's taking a little bit of revenge on the animal at this point in time. That would also be, again, either permitted, because that's not intending to make a mum. He's just doing it for ulterior motives over here, which is that he's upset. Or maybe it's still problematic, but we're not going to penalize you because you're not trying to make a mum here. The whole point is that it's an action that's not focused on making a mum. It's an action that's focused on relieving some of the frustration that you have with this animal. Amar Rav Yehuda, mutar la'atzil mum b'bechor kodem she'etzei la'avir olam. It is permissible to put a mum into a bechor before it is born. That is because the Kedushat HaBechor only devolves on the Bechor at the time of birth. So if you get the mum into it before the time of birth, you're not being matil mum in a Bechor. You're being matil mum in an animal that is kulin, and the Kedusha then devolves afterwards. The reason to do that is that when it's born, then you can immediately get benefit from it. You don't have to wait for it to get a mum, because the mum already pre-exists the Kedushat HaBechor. Amar Rava, Dia Biunei. The best way to deal with this is with a goat, to do it in its ears, imra, and a lamb, besifate, in its lips. And that has to do with the different physiology of the animals. The goats have very long, flappy ears. And so when the goat is born, the ears tend to come out first. The head, or the front of the face, the head's coming out, but the long ears appear first. Now, once the animal's born, you can't do anything, because it's already kadosh b'bechor, and you're asur to put a mum in it. So we're trying to get a piece of the animal, which comes out early enough that the animal's not classified as born, and also do something that's not really a significant mum that's going to ruin the animal, but enough that it will make it that the bechor can be shechted on it. So cutting the ear is an insignificant act. I mean, it's not going to damage the animal so badly, and it also will suffice to be a mum for a bechor. And it's the part of the animal that exits first by the goat. And therefore, that's your best choice. And Tosfot says that not only is it that we encourage you to do it this way because that's probably the safest way to do it, but when he sees that only a minority of the head is exited, then you're allowed to put a mum in the ear. Because we don't worry about the fact that the head has come out or there's a birth over here. It's so much so that the ears come out before the head that we're pretty certain if you see or you assess the situation to be that there's a miyot outside and the ears are there, you can make a mum without any problem. That's not true by the case of the lamb, because by the lamb, the ears are much smaller, and therefore, if you think that miut of the head that's come out, then you have to suspect that the whole thing has come out or more has come out. So by the time you see the ears, already the robe of the head has come out. And that's already classified as a birth. You either need the robe of the animal or the head, robe of the head to exit in order for it to be considered a birth. And therefore, we're trying to get this moment there before the animal is born. Igadamre, imra nami bude. Some say that even in a lamb, you could put the mum in the ears. Imra derstav nafak. It's in a case where Rashi calls over there temples, where the temples at the side of the head exited before the front of the head. Generally, when the animal is born, it's born with the mouth, the nose out front, head first, coming out of the birth canal. So normally, or in most situations, for the goat, it's possible that the ears are likely that the ears will be out before the whole face because they're so long. But by a sheep, it's unlikely because the ears are small. And by the time you see the ears, the robe of the head has already exited. So the case where that would not be true is in a case where the animal has its face tucked under. Its mouth or its face is tucked under the body on the way out. And therefore, when it comes out, it's the top of the head, the ears, and the temples that are exiting first, and not the mouth of the animal. In that instance, even by a sheep or by a lamb, you could put the mum in the ears. Dosva notes that when we said, and the ikadamre, imra nami budnei, imur derk taim nafak, even though the statement of the Gemara seems to be that there's a safek, or there's a possibility that happened, Tosfot says about that, by imur kemo vadai. It's not saying, let us say, it's not saying maybe that could happen, it's saying vadai, that is a possibility, and therefore putting a mum in the ears of the sheep is also a viable option. Now, as far as Rabbi Yehuda's statement, seemingly, it is only true bizman hazeh. Today, where the outcome, no matter what, of the bechor, is that we're going to wait for a mum, and then we're going to need a mum in it in order to eat it. In that case, we gave this dispensation to put the mum in earlier to prevent the problems of takala, gizav avodah, to have to not wait and have this bechor hanging around where everybody needs to feed it, take care of it, and just wait for a mum. So that would seem to be, this is a special dispensation for post-Korban HaBayit. So according to the Rishonim, it makes sense that this statement of Rabbi Yehuda is only true bizman hazeh, where the bechor is not going to end up in the mizbeach. There's no alternative besides a mum. But bizman beit hamikdash, this would not be permitted because then you'd be mafkia mitei mizbeach, and that we would not allow you to do, or we would not encourage you to do. Amar Rava, achal v'lo mechzeg. If when the animal eats, the mum is not visible, poi when it bleats umechzeg, meaning that it is making its noise and its sound, it opens its mouth up wide, then it is visible, have a muma. That classifies as a mum. Because in order for it to be a mum, it has to be a mum big galoi. It has to be something that is visible. So here, even if it's not visible when it's doing its normal activities of eating, but if it's visible when it bleats and it makes the sounds and the noises that that animal makes, that's already considered to be galoi, and it's a mum. My kamash malan. What's he teaching us? Tanina. We have it already in a Mishnah. Hachutim achitzonot. When you have the outer ones that are broken or filed down, hapnimiot, or the inner ones, shenekru, that were undermined, meaning uprooted completely. My time, what's the reason? La mishum dechipoi mikse. Isn't the reason that there's a difference here, or that the pnimiot are only true when they are uprooted, is because when it gives off that sound and opens its mouth wide, you're able to see them. Amar Rav Papa, Rava Naima Yitaima de Matnitin Mefarish. That's exactly what Rava is doing. Rav Papa says, Rava is not coming to make a statement independent of the Mishnah. He's explaining to you why the din in the Mishnah is such. Maitaima Nekru Avi Muma. Why by the back ones is a Akira, an uprooting of Mum. Shum Dechibayim Mechse. Because when he opens his mouth wide and he bleeds, then you can see the back of the molars, and you can see that they were taken out completely. Over here, the Ravenu Gershom translates the Pnimiot and the Chitziot in the following manner. Rachutim is the Shinayim Achitzoniot. It's the outer teeth, Shomdot Lifnei HaPeh, the incisors that are at the front of the mouth. That's what's being referred to in the Chitzonot. The Pnimiot are molars that are in the back of the mouth. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's a reference to the teeth. And it's a difference between the incisors, where they're in the front of the mouth, where they're very easily seen and problems are easily seen, over there, if they're broken or they're filed down to the gums, then it's a mom because that's very easily visible. By the molars, the only time it's a mom is if they were uprooted completely, because then when it opens its mouth wide, you can see that those molars are missing. But if they were just broken or they were filed down, you wouldn't be able to make that discernment. It's not easy to see. So it's got to be something more significant the deeper you are into the mouth. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Gershom. On the other hand, Rashi seems to indicate that it's a reference to the gums themselves rather than the teeth. It's a case where the gums are either cracked or broken or filed down, whereas in the back, you need the gums or the area where the teeth sit to be taken out completely. So for Rashi, it seems to be that he's talking about the gums and not the teeth themselves. So according to Rabbeinu Gershom, it seems like we're speaking about the teeth themselves. All right, next Mishnah. Kol ha-mumim aruim lavo bidei adam. Anytime that there's a mum that could have been inflicted by a person, roei Yisrael ne'manim. If the shepherds are Yisraelim, they are believed. Roim kohanim enam ne'manim. If they are kohanim, they're not believed, because kohanim are chashud to put mumim into a bechor. So now, if it's a mum that could possibly be inflicted on the animal, then we have suspicions. On the other hand, if it is a mum that was a natural mum, a congenital problem, like the animal's born with five legs, three legs, is born with different size eyes, all types of mumim that are congenital that nobody could impose on the animal, those types of mumim, clearly there's no chashad because they happened by themselves. They weren't imposed by anybody else. Shimon Gamliel omer, neman hu al shel chaviro, ve'enu neman al shel etzmo. Shimon Gamliel says he's believed about his friend's items. He's not believed about his own. The chashad is only about when he's testifying and he's no geah b'davar because it's his own product. When it's someone else's item, then he's believed in that situation. Rabbi Meir omer, achashud al davar, lo dano v'lo meido. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, says that if you are a suspect with regards to some issue in halacha, then you can't testify about that issue, and you also can't be a judge or adjudicate a case with regards to that issue. So Rabbi Meir says it makes no difference. If there is a problem with regards to his own things, there's also a problem with regards to other people's things. Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbelazar. Have a machloket as to how to understand the Mishnah. Chadamar roei Yisrael be'kohanim ne'manim. If it is Yisrael that is the shepherd, even though it's the Kohanim's possessions, the Kohanim's animals, he is believed. Lili gima lo chashinan. We don't worry about you getting a little bite to eat, you getting a little piece of the action. What we could have been afraid of is that the roei Yisrael will be matir, the bechor, for the Kohen. He'd be suspect to help out the Kohen, because he figures if the Kohen gets this bechor now and is able to eat it, he'll give me a piece of it. He'll give me a chance to partake in it. So we don't worry about that. Roei Kohanim be'Yisrael inemanim. On the other hand, a shepherd that is a Kohen, even if he's shepherding the flocks or the animals of Yisrael, he's not believed. Mei marmar, came into katarachna be, lo shavik lididi ba'vi lachvine. The Kohen makes a cheshbon and says, I'm working for him. I'm here with him. So if that's the case, if there's a mum in the animal, who's the most likely candidate to be the recipient of this bechor? That's me. And so therefore, he has a vested interest in this having a mum in it, because in all likelihood, the Yisrael's going to be giving it to him, and he looks at this animal as being his, almost, because he figures the Yisrael's going to give it to him. And that is true also by a Kohen to a Kohen, that we worry about gomlim, we worry about collusion. But obviously in this case, then there's no chashash for the fact that he's going to get the bechor, because his master is also a Kohen. In that instance, he still is not Naaman, not because of the reasons before of Ligima, or because of the fact that he might think he's getting the bechor, but for a separate reason, a new issue, which is gomlim, which is we worry about collusion, we worry about you scratch my back, I scratch your back, that there's a reason for the person to lie here, even though it's not for his benefit, because it might give him future benefit when the roles are reversed. So according to Rashi, this is a continuation of the situation before, which is umisvara nafkalan. Logically, we would say that Kohen Roeh einu ne'eman al yid habechor shel Kohen acher. That certainly a Roeh Kohen that is working for a Kohen, he is not believed, because we worry about collusion between them. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, explains this as being a totally independent statement, which is that we Kohen is not Naaman, because we worry about Gumlim. So it's nothing to do with being a Roeh. It's nothing to do with being a shepherd. We don't believe Kohanim coming and testifying for another Kohen, because we worry about collusion. Where if you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. Today I'll come and testify on your behalf. Tomorrow you'll come and testify on my behalf. So the Rashi sees it as a continuation of the Chashad that we had before, which is that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not really adding anything to the Tanakhama. He's just saying or extending what the Tanakhama said in a logical manner, which is that if you don't believe Roim Kohanim, then if you don't believe them by Yisrael, you're certainly not going to believe them when they are working for Kohanim, because over there there's even more problem, which is your Choshesh for collusion in that case, which they're going to help each other out. On the other hand, the Rain of Gershom here says there's a new Chiddush, which is that even if you're not a Roeh, even if you're not a shepherd, if you're a Kohen testifying for another Kohen, we're suspect in that case, because when you might be doing this in a way that is, you take care of me, I'll take care of you, and therefore we're not going to believe him. Vata Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Meimar, then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel comes to say, Neman hu ala shel chaviro, v'enu neman ala shel atzmo. He's believed with regards to his friend's item, but he's not believed with regards to his item, which is that when he's no gea b'davar, then he's not believed if it's his animal, but al shel chaviro, if it's his friend's animal, ben rabo, whether it's his master, ben acher, or whether it's someone else, the lo nechshadu kohanim, ela b'chor atzmo, shekvar natno lo Yisrael. They're only suspect with regards to a b'chor that they have received already, and that they are going to then be the beneficiary of whatever they do. So in that case, we worry about the kohanim's testimony. In cases where they're working for someone else, where they're taking care of someone else, they're not going to sin in that case for any future type of compensation, whether it's legima, whether it's gomlim, whether it's the assumption that he's going to get something from it. We don't worry about that. That's not something that we're choshesh for. And there's still a question as to whether Rabbi Shimon Gamliel agrees with the Tanakhama's position. Is it only where we're choshesh le'idud that it's a problem? Or is it even where it's a roeh kohen by the house of Yisrael, we're still choshesh over there? Because he's just not Naaman, because of other issues. He's going to give it to me, he's not going to give it to someone else. Does he also have that reasoning? Which is what the Rambam says, that he also thinks that the Tanakhama is right about the issue of a Roeh Kohen, whereas the Ramban and others suggest that he only thinks there's a problem to be an aid. He doesn't think there's other problems, and therefore only to be an aid be a problem according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But Rabbi Meir Lemeimar, and now Rabbi Meir comes to respond to that and says, a chashud adavar lo dano velo meido. If he's chashud for himself, then he's chashud for his friend, he's chashud to be an aide, he's chashud to be a dayan. He's precluded from this parsha completely because of his lack of trustworthiness with regards to these matters. So that's one view of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, that the focus here is on who is the shepherd. So if the shepherd is Yisrael, he's Naaman. If the shepherd is a Kohen, then he's not believed. And it turns out in this Lashon, it seems like Rabbi Meir is saying the same thing as the Tanakhama, where the Tanakhama says, Roei Kohanim are not believed, whether they're working for a Kohen or whether they're working for Yisrael. And that's exactly what Rabbi Meir says. If you're Chashul HaDavar, you're not believed, period. B'chad Amar, the other view is, Roei Yisrael vein Kohanim. The animals belong to Yisrael, but the Kohen is doing the shepherding, Nemanim. In that case, they are believed because the animals belong to the Yisrael. Here the focus is on who's the owner, not on who's doing the shepherding. And so since it's owned by Israel, it's fine. Neymar Amar lo shavik tzurmer midrabanan v'yav lididi. The Kohen's going to say in his mind when he's doing the shepherding over here, there's no way that Israel is going to be giving me this bechor. He's going to give it to the Talmidei Chachamim. He's going to give it to the Chaver out there. As Rashi points out, stam roeh amaretzu. The basic shepherd is an amaretz. If that's the case, he's not going to be the likely recipient of the bechor of this owner. Since he's not going to be the likely recipient, he sees no advantage in testifying falsely about whether there is or isn't a mum, because he's not going to be the beneficiary of that. And ein adam chata velo lo. Person doesn't sin when he's not the beneficiary of that sin. Roei kohanim. On the other hand, if the animals belong to the kohanim, vein Yisrael, and the shepherd is Yisrael, einam ne'amanim. The shepherds are not believed in that case because of the kohen's ownership, the chayshina l'gima. Because we do worry about this payoff, or this person getting a bite to eat because of the fact that he helped out his master, the Kohen. The koshikain, kohen the kohen, to lo, of course, a kohen for another kohen, of course we're not going to believe them, the chashina le gomlim, the chashina le ligima. Because over there, not only do you have the problem of ligima, which is the shepherd is now trying to please his master because he's going to get a piece of the action if he does the right thing here, but then on top of that, you have another issue, which is gomlim. Maybe they're trying to help each other out. Father Rabbi Shimon the Meimar. Then Rabbi Shimon goes along and says, Neman Ashok Chayveru, Ven Neman Elishaletzmo. He's believed about other parties' animals. Only time that you're not believed is when you're speaking about your own animals. So it only be in a case where it is a Kohen Roeh for his own animals, or a Kohen taking care of his own animals. But if the Kohen is taking care of another Kohen's animals, or Yisrael's animals, it's not going to be problematic because we don't worry about the Gima, we don't worry about Gomlim, we don't worry about any of these types of improper relationships, about any of these conspiracies here, that they're working together somehow in order to get benefit for both of them. And Rabbi Meir comes along to say, if you're suspect with regards to a matter, then you can't testify for anyone else, you can't help anyone else out at all. And so in that case, if the Kohanim are suspect, they can't testify for another Kohen. So Gemara says, Bishlam on the Mandamar, according to the second version of the explanation of our Mishnah, that we're speaking about Roei Yisrael, it's the animals of the Yisrael, and the Kohanim are shepherding them, that they are believed, Kainu da'ata Rabbi Meir the Meimar, that's why Rabbi Meir comes along and says, Achashur al-Bachor lo dano b'lo meido. The fact that the Kohen is involved here, he can't testify. So even though the animals belong to the Israel, because the shepherd is a Kohen, he's not believed. And then there's a significant difference between Rabbi Meir and the Tanakhama. In this second version, the Tanakhama says, the Roeh Kohen is believed. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, if you're a Kohen, you're Chashud, you're not believed, period. And that's exactly the difference between them. According to the first version that explained our Mishnah, that Roei Kohanim Be'Yisrael, the place where they're not Ne'amanim is a case where it's a shepherd that's a Kohen in the house of the Yisrael. Then what's Rabbi Meir coming to tell us in this case? Hainu Tanakama. It's the same as the Tanakama. Tanakama says a shepherd that's a Kohen is not believed. And Rabbi Meir says a Kohen is not believed. Igemenayu, the Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai. The difference between them is this view of Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai. The Tanya, Rabbi Breit, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai Omer, Bechor ben Kohen, Tzrich Shnayim in a Shuk La'id Alav. If you have a Bechor in the house of the Kohen, you need two people from the Shuk to come and testify with regards to it. Even his son, even his daughter can't testify about it. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilu Asara, Vein Bnei Bnei Toh, Vein Midim Alav. Even if they're 10 people, but as long as they're family members, they're not believed. Implying that if they weren't family members, they would be believed. Now, first of all, Rashi points out that there is a difference between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama, and that is that Rabbi Yossi says, Afil min ashuk eid achad ne'aman, that even an eid achad would be ne'aman according to Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi's requirement is only that it not be a family member. But outside of that, he doesn't require full-fledged testimony. He says, Eidecha ne'eman b'yisurim. All you need is an Eidecha that is not nogea b'davar, that's not a family member. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Kumsai says you need shnayim in a shuk. You need two people from the shuk to come and testify over here. You need real eidut in order to be matir the b'chor. Therefore, according to Rashi, the Tanakhama itlay the Yehoshua ben Kapusai. The Tanakhama holds like Rabbi Yehoshua ben Kumsai, that he says that Roei Kohanim, whether they're in the house of Israel, whether in the house of the Kohanim, Ne'amanim, they're not believed, but Kohanim ba'alma kashinam, but Kohanim in general, we would believe them. Ba'afilu ha'bechorot to Kohanim, even on bechorot of other Kohanim. Meaning, the only problem that we have is, lo kashin gomlim el beruah to kayigabe. The only time we worry about the person colluding or doing something that's improper is when he is an employee, when he is working together with this individual. So only when you have a Roeh Kohen do we worry about the fact that he's not Ne'eman, because he's thinking that he's going to get the Bechor, he's going to be a beneficiary of the Bechor. That's the only time, according to the Tanakhama, he's not believed. That means that you can have even two Kohanim from the Shuk testify about this animal. As long as they are not employees, they're not working as shepherds, then they are Ne'emanim. So that's how Rashi says the Tanakhama, who says that only a Roeh Kohen is problematic. You need to edim only when it's a Kohen Roeh. But other than that, you can have Kohanim themselves be the Edim. So too, that's Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai's view. Rashi seemed to indicate that you need two Edim, period. According to Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, doesn't matter if the Edim are Kohanim, doesn't matter if the Edim are Yisraelim, you need two. Rabbi Yossi's Chiddush, as the Rashi noted, is that you can't use people that are no Gevur Devar, you can't use his family, but anybody else would be believed. Eid Echad is Naaman over here, as long as it was Israel, the Eid Echad would be Naaman. So according to Rashi, that's the difference between Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai and Rabbi Yossi. So according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, any Ro'eh is not believed. But that also means that the Tanna Kamma of our Mishnah is slightly different than Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai. Because the Tanna Kamma of our Mishnah only thinks that there's a problem whether it's a Ro'eh Kohen. If it was a Ro'eh Yisrael, he doesn't think it's a problem. According to Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, doesn't matter if you're Yisrael or a Kohen, you need two Edim over here. So what it means is that it's along the lines of Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, which is that he requires a dut. It happens to be that only in the case of Kohanim, a Ro'eh Kohen does the Tanna Kamma require. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai requires it no matter what. That's what the Gemara is saying. That Bagei Ro'eh Kohanim, our Tanna Kamma holds like Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, but not completely like him. Rabbi Meir, who says that a person that's Chashud B'davar can't testify or can't adjudicate, doesn't matter to him whether you're a Ro'eh or not a Ro'eh. He says Kohanim are out of the picture completely. Therefore, he disagrees with Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai because he says that if Kohanim come to testify, they're not believed. Even if they're not Ro'im, they're not believed, period. And therefore, Rabbi Meir does not hold Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai. That is the difference in their opinion in the first version we gave to explain the Mishnah. On the other hand, Bali Tosafot over here say, even Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai believes that you only need two Edim when there are Kohanim. Tosafot says, Ushnai min ashuk to come out of Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, be Kohanim ayre. That's only true when you have Kohanim testify. Yisrael afilu echad me'aman. Even if one would be Naaman. Meaning that according to the Bali Tosafot, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai is only making this requirement when they are Kohanim, that you need two Edim. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai and Rabbi Yossi agree that by Yisrael, an Erechad is Naaman. In that way, then Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai is exactly like our Tanna Kamma. Our Tanna Kamma is only Chashad by Kohanim. Kohanim, a Ro'eh, is problematic. And then when you have Edim Kohanim, you need two Edim Kohanim in order to do it. But outside of that, you don't need two Edim. And therefore, the Tanna Kamma, like Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, believes that you only need Edut when it's a Ro'eh Kohen, and you only need two when it is Kohanim themselves that are testifying. So Tosafot makes it clear that it's only by Kohanim that you need two to testify, but if it's a single Yisrael, then it's Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Yisurim, and Yisrael could then testify about it. It means that even a Ro'eh Yisrael could testify in this case, because you only need Eid Echad when it comes to a Yisrael. Although, as we noted already, according to Rashi, and even according to the Rambam as well, even by Yisrael, Eid Echad is not Ne'eman B'Yisurim with regards to a Bechor, and that's likely because the Bechor has a Cheskat Isur already. It's something that's a Sur. Eid Echad is Ne'eman B'Yisurim when there's a question mark or a possibility of Isur. But when there's already a Cheskat Isur, and Eid Echad is not Ne'eman, and because the Bechor already has that Cheskat Isur associated with it, therefore an Eid Echad is not Ne'eman even by Yisraelim. So this will be a unique case where you'll need two Edim, even when it's Yisraelim that are testifying, or whether it's Kohanim testifying. And according to Rashi, that means that also by a Ro'eh Yisrael, he won't be Ne'eman, and you're going to need two Edim to testify as to the veracity of his statement. There is a then third version of this, which is Rabbeinu Gershom makes a second Lashon. And he says, this is the Nafka Mina between them. Ige ben Ayud, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai, the Tanna Kamma, late Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanna Kamma does not hold of Rabbi Yeshua. So according to the Tanna Kamma, a Ro'eh Yisrael would have been believed. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai says that's not true. No Ro'eh is believed because we worry about the Gima. We worry about him getting paid off by the Kohen to help him out. Given that, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai says you always need two Edim from the Shuk. So the Tanna Kamma can't hold like Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai because the Tanna Kamma says that a Ro'eh sells Naaman. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai says you always need two Edim. So Rabbi Meir, who says, oh, Chashud B'davar, here it's Chashud B'Gima. We worry about him doing it to get some benefit from the meal that's going to be served or the food that's going to come from this Bechor. Therefore, even a Ro'eh Yisrael is not Naaman. And Rabbi Meir could subscribe to Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai and say that you need two Edim to testify no matter what if it is a Ro'eh, whether it's a Ro'eh Kohen or a Ro'eh Yisrael. And that's why the Tanna Kamma of the first explanation that we said before cannot agree with Rabbi Yeshua ben Kubsai because he says a Ro'eh Yisrael is Naaman. It's Rabbi Meir who says that if someone who's chashur is not Naaman, will include a Roi Yisrael, because there's this Chashad of Ligima, and that Chashad of Ligima will make him no longer believable, able to testify. And therefore you need two Edim in all instances, and that'll be aligned with Rabbi Yeshua ben Kufsai. Or in essence, for the Rabbeinu Gershom, by Roi Kohen, there's no Machloket. According to the Tanakhama and Rabbi Meir, he's not Ne'eman, and you need two Edim. Their Machloket is about a Roi Yisrael. The Tanakhama says that he is believed, and then you don't worry about the Gima, and that's why he does not hold like Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai. Whereas Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai and says that even by your Roi Yisrael, you're not Ne'eman, you need Shnayim min Ashuk to testify. Those are three different ways to explain this differentiation between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Meir. According to Rashi and the Tosafot, it's that the Tanakhama holds Rabbi Yeshua Kapusai, depends how much. According to the Bali Tosafot, he holds completely like him. According to Rashi, he holds like him with regards to the Kohanim that are testifying, but not with regards to Yisrael, because Zayin Achad is Ne'eman with regards to Yisrael. Whereas the Rabbeinu Gershom sees it being just the opposite, that the Tanakhama does not hold the Rabbi Yeshua ben Kufsai. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kufsai always requires two Edim for any Ro'eh, because we worry about the Ro'eh Kohen and the Ro'eh Yisrael. Whereas Rabbi Meir holds the Rabbi Yeshua ben Kufsai, because he says that even a Ro'eh Yisrael is suspect, and therefore it matches up with Rabbi Shulman Kapsai, says that everybody is suspect, and therefore you can't testify in these situations. Kaman Azla, Had Amar of Chista, Amar of Katina, Safek Pachor, Shnolad Be Yisrael. If a Safek Pachor that's found in the house of the Yisrael, Tzrich Shnayim in Ashuk La'id Alav. You need two outsiders to come and testify about it. Kaman, who's that like? Kim Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai. That's like Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai, who says that you need two Edim to testify in these situations. Even when it's in the house of the Yisrael, still when there are Kohanim testifying according to Tosafot, according to Rashi, even if Yisraelim are testifying, you need two Edim to testify. That's like Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai. Nachman Omer, Balim Meidim Alav. In the case of a Safek Bechor Yisrael, the owners are believed. Eidachat Ne'eman Bisurim. Dilo Tema'ochi, if you don't say that, Maiser Beheima, the Rabbi Meir, Meid Alav. They have Maiser Beheima, according to Rabbi Meir, where the Balim are the interested party, how can they testify about there's a mum in it and that it happened by itself? If they are the owners and they are Dogeba Davar, Rabbi Meir says, whenever we have suspicions, you can't testify about it. Yisraelim can't testify about it because he's Chashud. A Kohen can't testify because Kohanim are Chashud. So according to Rabbi Meir, there's nobody left to testify. Meir says, no, Maiser Vadai Me'eman. By Maiser Be'ema, he's clearly believed, even according to Rabbi Meir. Because if he wants to solve the problem, he doesn't have to take the Maiser Be'ema after it's already Kadosh and put a mum in it, which is illegal. He could simply put a mum in all of his animals before he starts down the process. They're all chulin at that point. Then he puts them through the corral, and then afterwards the tenth one will be Kadosh, but he'll have a mum in it already. Since he has a solution that is legal, he's not going to go through the illegal way of doing this. And therefore he's Ne'eman over there, nobody's Chashud. A Safek Bechor, the Rabbi Meir, may meet a love. When it comes to the Safek Bechor, according to Rabbi Meir, how can he testify about it? The Yisrael himself is Chashud. It's a Safek Bechor where they'd be the beneficiary. And he has no other alternative. He has to wait for a mum. And there's nothing where he can do something beforehand to protect himself. And Kohanim can't testify because they're in general, they are suspect with regards to putting mumim in Bechorim. So according to Rabbi Meir, there's nobody left to testify. So then what are you going to say? Okay, you're right. According to Rabbi Meir, you can't testify about your own Bechor. That means that a Bechor, Safek Bechor of Israel, has no way to give Eden. Can you really say that there's no way to fix this problem? But now we have a Mishnah, Shaya Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kosh Khalifa Biyad Kohen Patur. Anytime you have a Safek Bechor, and you gave one Bechor to the Kohen, and you kept one for yourself because of the Safek, it's as if you gave the one that belonged to the Kohen and took it back. That has an afkamina, according to Rabbi Yossi, that you're not chayav to give the matanot, zro al chayim and kebah, to the Kohen, because of the fact that it was once owned by the Kohen, or the Kohen had some possession in it, because of Khalifa Biyad Kohen, because you handed him one animal out of the two, which is what you had to do. Once you did that, it's as if it was bartered to you, that animal, as if the Kohen touched it or owned it at some point, that makes it patur mimin matanot. Rabbi Meir mechayev. Rabbi Meir says you are chayav to give the matanot for that animal, mimon of shach. Either it's a bechor, and it belongs to the Kohen, he should have given the whole animal to the Kohen, or it's chulin, and then he's entitled to the matanot. So the zara, the chayav, mikibah, mimon of shach, you have to give to the Kohen. And therefore Rabbi Meir says you are chayav in matanot for that suffik b'chor. If that's the case, then Rabbi Meir clearly believes you can eat it. Because giving the matanot to the kohen are only meaningful if he can eat them. And that shows you that Rabbi Meir believes that you have a suffik b'chor for Yisrael, it can't be eaten. So then it can't be that there's no takanta over here. Elish mamina, balim ma'idim alaf. Balim are allowed to testify about a suffik b'chor. Kohanimu de chashideh mume. We are suspicious of kohanim with regards to putting mumim into animals. From Rashi, it sounds like the kohanim are chashudim on the mumim bizman hazeh because of the fact that if they don't have a mum in it, they're going to have to feed it, take care of it, and keep it around. Bizman beit hamikdash, there's an alternative, which is you can take it up to the mizbeach and get hanah from it immediately. Therefore, the kohanim are not chashudim. On the other hand, the Rambam seems to indicate that they're chashudim ben bizman hazeh, ben bizman habayit, because much more beneficial to them, even in Zman HaBayit, to have a mum in the animal, because then they don't have to go up to Shulayim, they can eat more of the animal. Although Rashi's logic would be that they're not chashud to do something like put mum in a kodoshim. They're chashud to put a mum in a bechor that's not otherwise going to end up in the Mizbech anyway. But it's going to end up in the Mizbech. We're not chashish that they're going to put a mum into a animal that could be thrown in the Mizbech. Yisrael lo chashid e mume. Yisraelim are not generally chashud al mumim. That's because it's very infrequent that they end up with a bechor. And in general, when there is a bechor, even if they testified about a mum, they're not going to be the beneficiaries of it. So in the one odd case where they are the beneficiary and it's their animal, we're not going to worry about it. Itmar. Rav Nachman Amar, halacha ka Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rav Nachman says that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that even the family is believed with regards to testimony over here. So Rashi says that the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel of the Braita Beno Bito, it's connected to the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel of our Mishnah, that you can't testify for yourself, but you can testify for your friend. As Rashi knows over here, Aviv Harihu Chaveiro. His father is classified as his Chaver, meaning he's classified as a third party, and he's not going to be Chashud, because the Kohen is Chashud about his own stuff, he's not Chashud with regards to someone else's stuff. And since you have considered classified like Chaveiro, and not like Nogeba Devar, like he himself, that's why you can trust him. Rav Amar, so Rav, who is from Nachman's Talmud, arguing on his Rebbe, says, Halacha ka Rabbi Yossi. The Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, that family members are not believed, but any outsider is believed, and according to Rashi, we saw that means even Eid Echad's Neman in this case. Mi Amar Rav Ahochi, the Rav really said Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Amar Rav, Balim Omdim Imanu Bachutz. The Balim are standing outside the house with us. Nichna Shalim, and the Bechor went into the house without any mum on it. The Yatsa Chabul, and it comes out with something that took a beating. It has a mum in it. All of a sudden it came out. And the Balim are standing next to us. Me'idim Alav. The person that's standing there can testify to the fact that the Balim were not in the house. So if they're testifying that the Balim were not in the house, that's not necessarily testifying that the family was not in the house. And that means that the family members will be believed with regards to the Bechor in the house, even though the Balim themselves are not believed. It says, no, Ema, amend the statement to say, Kol Balim Omdim, that all the owners are standing outside. Meaning not only the owner himself, but his family members are also standing outside. I mean, anybody that could be deemed the Balim over here, family members who are no Geba Davar, they're all standing outside. Velo Chashinan. And then we don't worry about the fact that this got a mum in it, by one of the family members. And when it says, Yochi, my the memra, then what's the chiddush over here? If everybody's standing outside, then why do you think that there's a problem with the inside? Of course the animal got injured by itself and not with someone else doing it. So, maladatema, nechush the chashto, we should worry about chashad, people either misinterpreting or suspecting that there was something untoward in this case. Kamash malan, but we don't say that. So, Narashi brings two explanations of what that means. The first of which is, the whole family is standing outside and the Ru'eh is testifying that he was either in the house or he was outside with the people and there was nobody else there. And then the Gemara says, maybe we should be Choshed, the Ru'eh himself, that he put a mum in it. The Kamash Malon is, we don't worry about the Ru'eh. So according to this Lashon, the Chiddush is that only the family members are not believed, but the Ru'eh is Naaman, and therefore the Ru'eh was in the house, or the Ru'eh was testifying about the family being outside, he is believed because he's not a family member. And we don't assume that he himself was the one who put the mum in there. We don't worry about people thinking that it was the Ru'eh that did it. The other Lashon Rashi brings this. Here we're testifying that the individuals who are the owner or the family of the owner are all outside. and then the animal went in and got injured. So maybe it would be a choshesh l'chashad, that they set it up that way, that they put some food on its ear. They dug a pit in the house, and they knew that when the animal went into the house, that there'd be a problem or would get a mum from that action.
Or Tosfot says, maybe they people will claim that there was somebody from the family still in the house.
So that's what people might suspect over here, that these individuals set it up so that it would get a woman inside. The Kamash Malan is, we don't say that. If they're all outside and the whole family's outside, we don't worry that they set up a situation that it'll get a mum when it enters into the house. Second lashon, it's not the Ruev's being believed, but Edim testifying to the fact that the family members were not in there. That's enough, but we don't necessarily believe the Ruev, or there's no indication as to what we feel about the Ruev's testimony over here. Those are two versions of Rashi's explanation of this Gemara, where the chashad is that the Ruev, who's testifying or who's in the house, whether we suspect that he did something over here, Kamashman is that we don't, or whether we worry about other people's impressions that even though the whole family and everybody's outside, the animal went in and got injured, maybe there was a setup inside that got the animal to be injured and it was premeditated rather than just accidental. And again, there, Kamash Malan, we don't worry about that. Kamar says, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that you can testify about others, not about yourself. Even family members can testify. Kamar says, v'davka b'no bito. That's only true of family members like a son and a daughter. Aval ishto lo. It's his wife. We do not trust her. My taima. Ishto kegufo, because his wife is considered to be like himself, meaning that they're considered to be a single party with single interests over here. If you're no geah b'davar, she's no geah b'davar. Children are already considered to be separate entities, but in terms of your wife, you and your wife are considered to be a single entity, and therefore, if your wife is testifying, we're not going to believe her in this case. Because ishto kegufo dami. Amalei rapapa le'abaye. So Rav Papa asked Abaye, the Rabbi Meir, Damar, Chashura, Davar, Lo Dano, Lo Meido. Rav Meir says that if you are Chashur for something, you're not allowed to testify about that matter. You're not allowed to adjudicate that matter. Vikamai Rabbi Meir. And Rav Meir says, Chashur, Davar, Echad, Chashur, Dukhol, Torah, Kula. That someone who is Chashur for one violation in the Torah is then Chashur, Dukhol, Torah, Kula. Konim, Hachanami, Dolo, Dino, Dino? Is that true then that Konim can't be judges? Meaning that now, Kohanim are chashud to put mumim in animals. So they're chashud of the barachad. And according to Rabbi Meir, someone who is chashud can't testify, can't adjudicate. And someone who is chashud on one thing is chashud on all the mitzvot of Torah. So at this point, the Kohen is chashud on all mitzvot of Torah, and that would preclude him from being or have the capacity to be a judge, because according to Rabbi Meir, if you're chashud on something, you can't be a judge. Ve'aktiv. How can you say that a Kohen can't be a judge with regards to these matters? Based on their statements, meaning their adjudication, that'll be the decision in all these disputes, or negate sarat. The Kohenim is the arbiter, where it says, Imar da'amar Rabbi Meir l'choshesho l'chuzgune mi'amar. Rabbi Meir is choshesh. It doesn't mean that we assume you are. Just because a person is choshud to put mumim in a bechor, that doesn't mean that he does put mumim in a bechor. Just means that we're choshesh for it. And we're choshesh that he puts mumim in a bechor. But we're not certain. For that reason, we're not going to say just because he's chashud al the bechor, he's now chashud in all other mitzvot. Because even by the bechor, it's not really a full-fledged understanding that he's going to do this. It's just a suspicion that he might do something. So if it's a chashasha, we're not going to be makzik the chashash to extend that to other areas of halacha. Tosfot over here discusses Rava and Abaye's machloket in the Gemara and Sanhedrin with regards to a person that is ochel nevelot hachis, whether that means that he's not neman just for these issues that are ben adam lemakom, as he then also not believe with regards to ben adam lechavero, where Rava says just because he doesn't follow the mitzvot doesn't mean that he doesn't interact with people properly or doesn't worry about how he treats people. And just because he's Rala Shamayim doesn't mean he's Rala Briot, and he can testify about issues that are Mamononot. But Zabai says, if he's a Mumar, he's not only not believed by Rala Shamayim, he's also not believed by Rala Briot. So Tosfot over here says that the Gemara here seems to be following that position of Abaye, which is one of the Yal Kagams, and we do pass on like Abaye over there. But he then says that maybe the Gemara could fit in according to Rava as well. And then he points out that Abaye's position there follows the Shita of Rabbi Meir, which seems to imply that that we paskin like Rabbi Meir. Even though over here, as Tosfot says, we're explaining it according to Rabbi Meir, velo sfira lan kabatei, but we don't paskin like him, and even if you're mukzak to violate one thing, you're not chashur al kol haTorah kula. So here the Gemara is just asking or speculating within Rabbi Meir, but it doesn't sound like we paskin like Rabbi Meir. Yet, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it says that Abaye, who we paskin like, is following the shita of Rabbi Meir. And therefore, if you're Rav Shammai, you're going to be Rav Briot, you're not Neman on anything, like Rabbi Meir says. When you're chashud on one thing, you're chashud on everything. So Tosfot says that's uniquely associated with Eidut. Eidut has a special pasuk that says, Al Tashed Rasha Eid. Because there, the Torah specifies you're not allowed to make a Rasha into an Eid. And in that situation or circumstance, if you're a Rasha, you're precluded from being an aid, even though your rishut is only about one area, it still then is extrapolated to other areas of halacha, and you're not believed at all. So there's where Rabbi Meir's shita is accepted, the halacha, where Abaye says that if you're rather shemaim, you're also rather briot. But that's uniquely associated with eidut. Tosfot says, because of the pasuk in the Torah, that says you can't be an aid and put yourself together with a rasha. Absent that, we will not pass on like Rabbi Meir, which is the tone of our Gemara here, that we're just saying within Rabbi Meir, we're explaining or asking a question with Rabbi Meir, but not that we're indicating or implying that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines down on the top of Lamed Vav, Amid Aleph.